From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, opening the doors of perception, human consciousness. Here's what's happening. iPhones might one day soon carry Made in America labels. How about that? A key Apple assembler, also known as Foxconn Technology, has been studying the possibility of moving iPhone production to the United States. Presently, 200 million iPhones are made in Asia. That would be some fantastic news for us. Twitter has suspended a number of prominent accounts associated with the so-called alt-right movement in an apparent purge. A Twitter spokesperson said that the company's policies forbid violent threats, harassment, and hateful conduct, saying that they'll take whatever action on accounts violating those policies. Lauren Weinstein, expert on the Internet. Sounds like good news, Lauren, but what's your take?
Yeah, well, Twitter has been under a lot of pressure to cut down on harassment, especially, and violent threats and things like that, as you were saying. I think it's important for people to realize that when Twitter applies these kinds of policies, if you look at the kinds of accounts they've been closing, I mean, they closed 125,000 accounts that were related to ISIL, for example. It's not the political philosophy so much, it's the actual speech. So regardless of whether it's a right-wing account or a left-wing account or whatever, if someone is using that account to harass individuals or to make violent statements about particular people or particular races or things like that, that's when Twitter goes after those accounts. It's also really important to remember, and a lot of people are confused about this, the First Amendment does not apply to Twitter. It doesn't apply to private firms. The First Amendment only applies to the government taking actions to restrict speech. So Twitter is completely free to make whatever decisions they want about what kinds of speech they want to permit on their platform.
Now back to what's happening all over the world. Even the Facebook is getting blasted for what they call phony news stories, Lauren. That's dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, and this has actually been going on in other countries. Facebook has had problems in other countries with fake news in the past, and now it's become very much in focus right now because of the lead up to the last election. The issue here is that people should be free to say whatever they want to say, but when people specifically set out to make fake news look like real news, a platform like Facebook or other social media can create what we call them filter bubbles or echo chambers. Mm-hmm. The algorithms, the systems, just keep showing people items that seem to agree with what they're looking at already. So if a fake news story gets into one of those, it just gets passed around and passed around, and you know, it could be in the hands of hundreds of thousands of people. And it's fake. And even if you try to put out a story later that says, well, that wasn't an actual item, that was a lie, you'll never get it to the same number of people who saw the original fake story. So right now, an awful lot of people in the big social media companies and Internet people like me and others are really thinking about this very hard, because this is a really big problem now.
Lauren, what's the best website to get to you?
The best way usually is just to go to vortex.com, V-O-R-T-E-X.com, and that leads to all my other stuff.
Great, thanks. Lauren Weinstein, God, he's an expert on the Internet. A migration organization says that about 340 migrants have died or gone missing in four Mediterranean Sea shipwrecks over the past 2.5 days. Jeez. And by the way, 4,500 number of the migrants who have died or disappeared so far this year alone, making the risky sea voyage to try to get away, to get to a better life. 4,500 people have died this year already. U.S. housing starts surged to more than a 9-year high in October as builders ramped up construction on both single and multifamily homes, offering some hope that housing will contribute to economic growth in the fourth quarter. Michael Shedlock, Mish, the registered investment advisor. I keep hearing housing's got a bubble and it's going to burst. Mish, how about you?
Well, this was the biggest surge in housing since August of 2007. It caught me by surprise, George. I got to say, I did not expect this. We can only look at the numbers, and they are what they are. However, I pulled up a chart and put it on my blog. Guess what? Housing starts at a level we first hit. I'm going to surprise you by this. in October of 1959.
Jeez.
That's how depressed things have been. And that's how much the Fed has had to step on the gas just to get things back to normal. But meanwhile, I'm looking at the Trump's budget projections here. There's a $12 trillion hole in it. And also, we had a monstrous surge just in the last quarter of well over a trillion dollar deficit in the Obama administration now. I keep wondering how we're going to pay for all of this. And look, okay, GDP is going to go up in the fourth quarter. So they're going to hike. The Fed's going to hike. My recession call is probably off for this year. It's not going to happen. But taking trillion-dollar deficits just to get, we're going to average under 2% GDP this year. How are we going to pay for this? I keep asking this question, and I keep thinking a recession is still in the wings, and I still think a collapse in global trade is coming, George.
We shall see, Mish. Thank you so much. Up next, he sent the scientific world on its heels. Robert Felix, not by fire, but by ice, the coming ice age, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you along with Robert Felix, former architect, became interested in the ice age cycle back in 1991. He then spent the next 8.5 years full-time researching and writing about the coming ice age in his book, Not by Fire, but by Ice. Since then, he's also written Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps as well. One of our favorite guests, and here he is, Robert Felix. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Good. How are you, George?
Tonight? Good. Looking forward to this. Hope you have great holidays, Robert, and kick in the new year the right way, huh?
No, I'm looking forward to it, yes. Lots of good food.
So I was in Denver last weekend taping our Beyond Belief television shows, and they were complaining about how warm the weather was and the fact that they had no snow, which was uncanny for them at that time of year. Well, today they got blasted. Snow has hit, and it's becoming more normal again. In St. Louis, where I am right now, Robert, it hit close to 80 degrees today, almost a record, but it's going to get cold again. You have always said that we're in a coming stages of an ice age, and now there are some scientists who are beginning to say the same thing. Give us an update on that.
Well, there are. And the latest one, I just put it on my website today, but there's a Dr. Habibulo Abdusamatov. Boy, that is a...
That's a great name. You could pronounce it any way you want. Who's going to question it, right?
But anyway, he's an astrophysicist. And he says that a new little ice age has begun. He's not that it's going to begin, not at some future date, but right now. And now, Dr. Abdusamatov, I mean, he's an astrophysicist, but even then he's not an ordinary astrophysicist. He's head of the Space Research Laboratory at the Russian Academy of Sciences, and he's head of the Russian part of the International Space Station. So, you know, this guy is no slouch. And he says that we are already in a new little ice age. So, you know, when I first came out with this, I think the first time I was on Coast to Coast was back in 1997 mm-hmm. with Art Bell. And I said that we would be admitting that we were an ice age within 20 years. And at least Dr. Abdusamatov is going along with it.
You might have been the basis for the book that he wrote with Whitley, The Coming Global Superstorm.
I doubt it. I don't think I was the basis for it. But but I don't know. Who knows?
You never know. So New Zealand got hit with a huge earthquake last week. They had tsunami warnings coming up. And they talked about flashes of light that were in the skies. What do you think of that?
Well, they did. And, you know, that just intrigued me. I had to look up something that I had in my book. Because way back in the book, I have one chapter that is actually called Earthquake Lights and Crazy Snakes. And it's just a fun chapter, but I started out, if I can just talk a little bit about it, but On December 16, 1811, one of the strongest earthquakes to ever strike the heartland of the United States tore through the frontier city of New Madrid, Missouri. So I don't know if you have any people near there, but
I'm there. I'm close by. I'm in St. Louis. We're at the tip of it.
Okay. All right, then you probably heard about it then, but trees twisted and splintered as entire forest crashed to the ground, while huge cracks, some so wide that no horse could jump them, yawned open in the frozen soil. Shaking with sleep from their weary eyes, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, terrified townspeople leapt from their beds only to watch helplessly as their cabins and chimneys fell to the earth and the ground collapsed beneath their feet. Collapsing, settling, slumping, whatever you call it, New Madrid sank 1.5 stories into the ground, while entire islands disappeared beneath the surly brown waters of the Mississippi. Then the river rushed backwards as 3-story tall waves surged upstream, overtopping the river's banks and gushing into newly sunken areas to create St. Francis and Real Foot Lakes in Tennessee. Happy holidays, New Madrid. It looked like the end of the world. Or a battlefield, or Armageddon, said panicked settlers, as the air grew thick with sulfurous vapors and eerie flashes of light burst from the ground, illuminating the skies like distant lightning. Earthquake lights. So that's how that chapter starts out, earthquake lights and crazy snakes.
And the Mississippi went the opposite way. That earthquake was so big.
Yeah, it actually ran uphill for a little while, and then it did create those two new lakes that didn't even used to exist there. You know, the bells, it rang, that earthquake was so big that it rang church bells in Boston. Huge. But anyway, it's the point was, you know, when I saw that New Zealand was having earthquake lights, I mean, I've had people email me and say, oh, no, it had to have been electric transformers or something and wires rubbing together. But some of it was out over the water. There's no electric transformers out there to be doing that. And these earthquake lights, I mean, I also write in there about I'm not sure how to say it. Tangshan, it was probably Tangshan, China, but there was a great big earthquake back there in the 70s that had huge lights. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and these lights lit up the sky. They covered something like more than 100,000 square miles. It was just huge, and just prior to that, it was February, and somehow snakes were getting the message, and animals get the message, but snakes were crawling out of the ground, and then they were instantly freezing to death. But something, whether it's magnetic forces or what, was telling them. Catfish were jumping out of the water. Cockroaches were twirling in circles. So that stuff is so fascinating sometimes. You wonder why in the world it happens.
Robert, why do you think we're in the beginning stages of an ice age? What are you seeing out there to give you that conclusion?
Well, the number one, I guess, is that there's actually a cycle to ice ages that we seem to ignore, is that ice ages have a tendency to come and go about every 11,500 years. There's apparently a major ice age about every 23,000 years, but then with a pulse of ice age at about the 11,500-year point. The problem that we have is that the last ice age occurred almost exactly 11,500 years ago. So I know we've got all this talk going on about global warming, but I see us just because of that cycle. There's a lot of different cycles, but there's just so many different cycles. There's the 11,500-year cycle. There's the Little Ice Age cycle coming about every 360 years. There's a solar retrograde cycle coming about every 180 years. And we are right at the point where every one of those cycles is due to repeat itself. So regardless, I think we're being arrogant to think that humans can affect the climate enough to avoid an ice age.
You've talked about underwater volcanoes that have created climate change because they heat up just like a slow boiler, right?
Yes, absolutely. I have a one chapter of my book. Again, it goes after this, but we've learned a lot. You know, when I started researching and writing Not by Fire but by Ice, that was in 1991. Scientists guesstimated that there were 10,000 submarine volcanoes in the entire world, you know, underwater volcanoes. And then just a couple of years later, marine geophysicists discovered another more than 1,100 that they'd never heard of before, just off the coast of Easter Island. And those underwater volcanoes, we're talking huge volcanoes. Some of the newly found volcanoes rose almost 1.5 miles above the seafloor. But the water's so deep there that even though they're 1.5 miles tall, their peaks are still 1.5 miles below the water's surface. And these were small, in a small area about the size of New York State. But the thing is, we have no idea how many volcanoes may be down there. What we know is that they just pump huge amounts of heat, red hot basalt actually. It's up to 1,200 degrees Celsius, meaning 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, what is that? 10 times the boiling point. And it's just pumping this red hot basalt into the seas. And so way back when the book first came out, I made the audacious suggestion that those underwater volcanoes were heating our seas. And you know, the global warming alarmists just scoffed at me. You know, 11,000 submarine volcanoes could not possibly be heating the seas, they said. But the thing is that we keep finding new ones. The number of underwater volcanoes, they keep finding more and more. By 2005, NASA was forced to admit that there might be 1 million underwater volcanoes. And as many as 75,000 of those would have been active. I mean, it's just the number keeps growing and growing and growing. Then I think probably the last time I was on with you, I think that that number had risen to 3 million underwater volcanoes. And yesterday I posted an article. Now there are new studies out that are estimating there may be as many as 10 million underwater volcanoes.
Well, that's enough to cook things, isn't it?
It's got to be. I mean, and you got that stuff pouring into the water at 2,200 degrees. Now, back when there were only 11,000, maybe they were right. And maybe that couldn't possibly have been heating the seas. But I mean, if anybody's been to Hawaii and seen where the lava is pouring into the sea, the water's actually boiling where that lava pours into the sea. I have not had a chance to see that. That's one of my goals, is to see that someday.
That would be something else. So, you know, with this coming ice age, is that dangerous for everybody? Are we going to be able to make it through that?
Oh, I'd like to say yes, you know, but we're not prepared for it at all. What I worry about truly is, now, I should say, we can get to this later, but the whole world will not be covered with ice. But what I worry about is that it'll start in the north, is that the wheat fields, the breadbaskets of the world will be covered. And, you know, you don't have to have, they don't have to be covered with mile deep glaciers. All you got to do is have enough snow remain on the ground for a whole year through a planting season, and we're in trouble. And so the thing I've been saying all along is I think we'll be fighting in the streets for food long before we're covered by ice. So, yes, I think it'll be very dangerous.
All right, my friend Robert, for people who want information on what you do and where you go, not by fire but by ice, I want to talk about magnetic reversals when we come back in a moment. But give us your website, please.
IceAgeNow.info.
Simple as that. And when you started doing this, you like gave up architecture just to concentrate on this, didn't you?
I did. I spent 8 years full time researching and writing a book, no pay. But yeah, it just I don't quite understand where it came from, but it just grabbed me, and I didn't have any choice. I went to the University of Washington Natural Sciences Library just about every single day and just spent the time there researching, and each time I found something that led to something else, and I had planned on writing the book in 6 months. And
it took a while. Robert, to stay with us, we're going to come back and talk about magnetic reversals in just a moment. And next hour, with you science-inclined folks, you get a chance to talk with Robert Felix as we talk about the coming mini ice age and, of course, his latest work, Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps. That title alone, Robert, says a lot because you're convinced magnetic reversals also have an influence on ice ages, don't you?
Absolutely. And one of the big reasons I say that, well, I just see it matches the same cycle. There was the Gothenburg magnetic reversal about 11,500 years ago, and we had a ice age. That's when the mammoths went extinct. I mean, so we're talking a huge problem. The mammoths went extinct. The mastodons went extinct. Actually, scientists have found that mammals that weighed more than 100 pounds were the ones that were most at risk. And, we weigh more than 100 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
But then there was the Mono Lake magnetic reversal about 23,000 years ago. That was a huge extinction.
And when you talk about a magnetic reversal, explain what that is, Robert.
Well, what it is the Earth doesn't tilt upside down or something like that. It's just that the North Pole moves south. And sometimes it's called a magnetic excursion, where it moves part way to the south and then pops back up. Sometimes it goes all the way down. So the compasses, instead of pointing toward the North Pole, toward Santa Claus Land, are going to point toward Antarctica. And part of it here is that, if you look the regular scientific literature, they'll tell you that the last magnetic reversal was about 780,000 years ago. But I think they're making a huge mistake in not including these magnetic excursions, because those do seem to recur in sync. I mean, there was Gothenburg, the Mono Lake, the Lake Mungo. There's so many different magnetic reversals, the Blake magnetic reversal at the end of the Eemian period. So I just see them totally correlating with each other.
Okay, now with these reversals, what does it do to navigation, GPS, birds? What happens to all of that?
Well, I'm assuming, the GPS, I'm pretty sure, would be going off, and certainly a lot of birds do navigate by magnetic somehow, that they have a magnetic sensor. Yeah, they have something. I think there would be a lot of confused animals. I mean, just when you look at during earthquakes, is that the changes in magnetic intensity have the cockroaches twirling in circles and things like that. So I think there would be a lot of things, but one of the things that also seems to happen with magnetic reversals is that volcanic activity picks up a lot. And I think that has a lot to do with why we go into ice age.
And what about earthquakes?
Oh, yes, earthquakes too pick up, but with the back with the mammoth extinction, for instance, there are so many volcanoes going off that they have found in Alaska, they have found mammoth bones that are interspersed with the volcanic ash. And in Washington State, Mount St. Helens, they have found bones interspersed with its volcanic ash that date to that same time. So what I see is you have underwater volcanoes going off like crazy that are pumping huge amounts of lava into the sea and heating the sea. And at the same time, you've got the above water volcanoes going off that are cooling the skies. So you've got all this excess moisture rising into colder skies. And, I think that's what leads you into an ice age. And it can happen a lot faster than anybody realizes.
And what at what point are we in our magnetic reversal now? 10%, 40%, how far in?
Okay, and that has changed too since I started writing the book. When I started writing the book, magnetic field strength was declining about 5% per century.
Okay, per century.
Magnetic
all right.
That has a tendency, previous studies shows that as you go into a reversal, the magnetic field strength declines, and then it snaps and changes. The field flips. Well, when I started the book, it was 5% per century, but it has speeded up. And now scientists are saying that magnetic field strength is declining 5% per decade. So it has really speeded up. And I fear that that is another indication we're headed for a magnetic reversal. I'm not alone on that. The British Geological Survey thinks, they just came out a couple of years ago admitting they think that we're headed for a reversal. So, yeah, I see that happening right now. Now, when actually exactly it's going to happen, no one knows. I mean, a lot of studies have said that it takes 5,000 years for it to happen, and other studies say it takes 500 years. But there's one study when they studied Steens Mountain in central Oregon. What they did at Steens Mountain is they drilled into some old lava flows. And then what they do is they put compasses down in there, because lava, when it comes out of the earth, is non-magnetic, and it takes on the magnetic field of the day. So they can drill holes into that old ancient lava, and they can put a compass down there and see which way was north at the time. Well, in this case, in Steens Mountain, they drilled holes at the edge of the lava flow, and then they drilled different holes in the center of the lava flow, and they realized that they were different, which meant that the magnetic reversal had occurred during the time it took for that lava to cool down, which means, and there's a lot of controversy over this, but this means that that magnetic reversal could possibly have occurred in only 30 days.
And you're saying with magnetic reversals that always an ice age follows?
I don't know if always is the right word, but certainly in the ones that I have seen in the last, 12 of the last magnetic reversals did have an ice age.
Well, that's pretty high odds.
So, yeah, they're the very, very high odds, yes.
What about the core, Robert? Remember that movie, The Core, where it stopped rotating and they had to go down there and get it to start churning again? What's going on down there?
I've not seen that movie, so I don't know what's going on down there.
That might have something to do with the reversal.
It might. One of the things, though, is I hear people talk about how much pressure there is down there at the core with all of the earth that's pushing down on it. And, as an architect or as a former architect, I've designed a lot of buildings that have arches. And that arch holds up all of the weight above it without any problem because it just spreads the weight around. And I think our center of our earth, I'm not saying it is hollow, but I think it could be. Because I just don't see all of that pressure bearing down. It moves out to the side, the same as with an arch. And so I don't see all that pressure. I don't believe that there's as much pressure down there as everybody talks about.
One of the inaccuracies about talking about an ice age is people generally think it means cold, cold, cold all the time. These things occur with extreme heat tossed in the middle, right?
Oh, yeah. The last ice age, the last big one, the major one, it started at the end of the Eemian period. And just let me back up a little. The Eemian period was a time from about 127,000 years ago to about 115,000 years ago. So it was about 12,500 years long. It was warmer than today, even warmer than today. And then we had the Blake magnetic reversal, and we descended into catastrophic glaciation in less than 100 years. But to go with you is that, it can go from a period of warmth greater today into full-blown glaciation that quickly. And when I say glaciation, you're right. It doesn't have to be all that cold. There are scientists out there who say it's cold enough right now to have an ice age. All we need is more precipitation in the winter that doesn't melt in the summer. So I think it's cold enough right now.
Well, it very well could be. And one of the things with the ice age, Robert, is as illustrated in your book, we always used to talk about that, is the height of the ice in that metropolitan city, which looks a little like Chicago to me, but it could be any big place. How high is that ice?
Well, you know, I had a geologist from New York who was making the assumption that that was New York City. It's not. It's just a city.
Yeah.
It's just there. But anyway, he wrote to me all angry because he said that my ice was not near thick enough. That New York City was covered by five times as much ice as I was showing on the book. But yeah, now the whole world does not get glaciated. That's the good news. During the last ice age, Seattle was covered by about 4,000 feet of ice, but the ice only extended as far south as Olympia, Washington. And south of Olympia, people could have lived quite well. You know, I lived up in Juneau, Alaska, and I lived maybe a quarter mile in front of the Mendenhall Glacier. So you've got the glacier right there, and yet a quarter mile away, people are living just fine. So during an ice age, I've got a map on my website down on the lower right-hand side that shows where the ice extended to during the last ice age. And I would anticipate that this ice age, the coming one, will be essentially the same. All of Chicago was covered. Seattle, as I said, Seattle was covered. But Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, was not covered. And then Chicago was covered, and then it went down as far as the Ohio River. So most of Pennsylvania was covered. Almost all of New York State was covered. All of New England was covered by ice up to a mile deep. And a lot of Canada was covered by ice 2 miles deep. And at the same time, sea levels were way lower because that's where all of the water comes from to build up those ice sheets. So, you know, I hear all this talk about rising sea levels. I think we're about to see sea levels start going down. And because we're headed into a little ice age, I think we're going to start seeing sea levels go down within the very next few years.
What's going on with the Arctic ice shelf? Is it melting or growing?
It depends on where you're looking. The Greenland ice sheet right now is growing. Now, it's been melting, I agree. But right now, the Greenland ice sheet is growing at a record pace. And of course, Antarctica has been growing through all of this. I mean, I do read newspaper articles and internet articles about the ice melting in Antarctica. But you got to be careful about that because the ice has been melting somewhat in the West Antarctic Peninsula, which is surrounded by those warming oceans. But when you go inland, the ice has been accumulating for years and years and years and years. Antarctica contains something like 90% of all of the world's ice. And the fact that it is growing makes me able to say that 90% of the world's glaciers are growing, even though we're hearing about this global warming stuff.
Well, this is remarkable work you've been doing, and the fact that more and more scientists, Robert, are beginning to jump on board with this, I think adds even more credence to this, don't you think?
I do, and I appreciate it. Yeah, this was a few years back. I was over in London, and I got to visit Piers Corbin, who's an astrophysicist in London. And there's another astrophysicist who says that we're headed into an ice age. Because these astrophysicists, you know, they're studying the sun, and they're studying sunspots. And they're, you know, right now, sunspot activity is the lowest it has been in more than 100
years.
Even NASA admits that.
Well, that's good. We won't get hit by an X-flare, or maybe we will. Who knows, huh?
Well, I don't know. it's already back to what is called the Dalton minimum. That was when Napoleon tried to invade Russia, and he got caught up in all of those snowstorms that killed like half a million of his
wiped them out. Wiped them out.
Yeah, wiped them out. So, but anyway, right now sunspot activity is lower than it was during Dalton, and it looks like it could be even. I've been keeping track of the sunspots each day on my website, and we've just had in the last 2 months we had 27 days with no sunspots, completely spotless. So again, that's an indication to me that these astrophysicists are absolutely on the money.
Is there any alarm with scientists? I mean, have you picked that up from anybody on anything, the reversals, the ice age? Is there anything that is so serious they're really concerned about?
I'm pretty alone, I think, on the magnetic reversal part.
You are.
I haven't picked up much there. But when it comes to the possibility of an ice age, certainly, you know, a lot of them are coming on board as far as a little ice age. As far as the bigger ice age, no, I'm still kind of hanging out there.
And what will it be like in the places that are traditionally snow covered, like Siberia?
Oh, they'll be covered. I mean, the ice is still melting there in Siberia. They're still uncovering mammoths that were trapped during the last ice age. I write in the book about there's areas in Siberia where they are still uncovering mammoths, and they feed the meat to their dogs, and the dogs actually love it, even though it's been there for 11,500 years. Something trapped those mammoths, and we're talking millions of mammoths, not just a few, millions. You know, I've heard some people say, oh, humans did it, but there were more mammoths than humans, and there weren't any humans in those northern parts of Siberia. But anyway, they're uncovering so many of those that were trapped, some of them still standing up, some of them with fresh flowers still in their mouths. So something trapped them in a hurry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they even chipped out a woolly mammoth in the ice. And you're right, with greenery still in his mouth.
Yes, yeah. And
that was pretty darn fast.
Oh, yeah, that is so fast. And that's what I fear about. And the way that would come about is giant blitzes of snow. You know, I'm not saying, when I talk about an ice age, I'm not talking about these huge glaciers grinding out of the north. I'm talking about just bigger and bigger snowstorms. Because when I say that Seattle was covered by 4,000 feet of ice, and that happened in like a few thousand years, but it takes like 100 feet of snow to compress into 1 foot of ice. So they had to have been having giant snowstorms just almost constantly. And, you know, I had somebody, I did a radio interview in Winnipeg, and somebody was asking me, well, you know, how could that happen? I said, well, just let's say that it doesn't get any colder than in Winnipeg than it is right now. Let's just say that some January you get 10 feet of snow every day.
And it just doesn't melt a lot. And it keeps accumulating. Robert, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.